We just got back from talking to people we don't know about abortion, and now we're debriefing. Join us. We are Created Equal, and we're inviting you to debrief with us. Hey, y'all. I am Esther,
and
I
normally don't say Lexi's going to love that.
But you know what? I thought I should channel the spirit of Lexi. I'm the producer of this podcast. I'm behind the scenes normally.
Not today.
No, because Lexi is in Florida for a training conference thing. So she's not able to join us this week, but I got to jump in because Grace had a great conversation.
Well, yes, she did.
Great or annoying?
And hi, I'm Seth, by the way, for those who may not know the other voice.
Right. This is Seth.
There we go. Thank you.
We all know Seth.
And today's conversation, Seth. I think, Esther, will be really cool because you're going to intro Grace in a moment. But I think it's going to be very applicable to people about how to deal with this whole thing of personhood theory, this idea that some humans aren't valuable. Very important information in this conversation.
Mm-hmm. And Grace, we had you on the podcast, I think last year you were on it, and you had the great episode called Outreach Trolls, another interesting conversation at Otterbein. I'm so sorry. I realize we only really have you on this show when you have had really annoying conversations, and I'm sorry about that. Hopefully one of these days we'll have you on for a very positive, uplifting conversation. She's a part-time worker in the Create Equal office. She works for their admin department. And so we're just love to have you on the show, Grace. So why don't you tell us a little bit about,
Let's just jump in with what kind of outreach you were doing and what you like about that outreach style.
Yeah, thanks for having me back, guys. So we were at The Ohio State University, which is not too different from Otterbein, actually. The atmosphere is still pretty hostile, lots of people with horrible worldviews. But I love college outreaches. I just love getting to have open-minded conversations with people and just to get to hear what they think about abortion and hopefully get to change their mind.
Well, I think we'll try not to nerd out too much, but I think all three of us would love that kind of conversation. We love college outreach, love digging into worldviews, and Maggie's in the room with us here as well because she's going to be learning some of the ropes with the podcast. I think all four of us could just veg out on what we love. Veg out, that's not the right word. Nerd out, that's nerd the out, word. Yes. The opposite, right? Of nerd out about what we love about those kinds of conversations. So let's dive in.
And I don't know about you, Grace, but I love the crazy conversations where you're kind of diving into the weeds of someone's worldview, which is kind of frustrating sometimes, but I don't know. Do you enjoy this or do you find it more frustrating? Would you rather have a different type of conversation where it's more uplifting, or does this type of conversation, does this excite you more?
Yeah, no, I love it in general. This guy specifically did not seem to have any amount of respect for me. He was glaring at me the whole time. He seemed really uptight. He was like crumpling up the Created Equal brochure into a tighter and tighter ball the whole time we were talking and just glaring at me. So in general, yeah, I really, really enjoy it. But this guy in particular was just very hostile and not open-minded in the slightest.
Okay, well, to give you guys a glimpse, we're going to play two clips for you, but this first clip is just the beginning of this conversation. We'll play that for you guys now.
Hey, what do you think about abortion?
I think it's a necessary medical procedure that should not be made illegal to do safely.
Healthcare doesn't kill people, though.
It's not a person if it hasn't been born yet.
Why is that?
Why do you think somebody who hasn't been born yet should be considered a full person with all the rights of somebody who has been born?
Well, we know from science that they're a human being, they have human DNA, and they come from two human parents. And I don't think that going through the birth canal gives someone the right not to be killed while someone in the womb doesn't have the right to be killed.
Okay, the audio is pretty clear there, but still there's some things, Grace, that were a little muffled because he was walking away from you. So can you kind of first just summarize what happened in the audio clip?
Yeah, so as he approached me and I asked him, what do you think about abortion? He said that he doesn't think that a necessary medical procedure should be made illegal when it's done safely now. And he started to walk off, but I just said really quickly, healthcare doesn't kill people. And that apparently sparked his interest. And he stopped and came back to start the conversation.
And then he kept saying, so the baby's not been born yet, right?
Yeah,
and emphasizing that. What was his point with that?
Yeah, he thinks that at any point throughout a pregnancy, even if the baby is viable, that it is okay to abort that baby because they haven't been born. So to him, being born is what gives us value.
Now we'll jump into a lot, Esther, but one thing I found fascinating about that clip was he just tried to shift the burden of proof really quickly.
Yep.
He made the claim that if you're not born, you're not a person yet. And you said, well, how do you know that? And he said, well, why do you think you would be a person? But you didn't make any claim at that point. You had merely asked, what is your opinion? Mm-hmm. And then how do you justify that? That was a quick, artful way of trying to get out of the conversation or get out of the burden of proving, justifying what he had said.
Yeah. And I watched a little bit of this conversation earlier today. And so I wanted to ask you, Grace, kind of going off that, what do you think his expectations were coming into this conversation? Because he seems to have a very specific demeanor in the one confrontational way he approaches you and different things like that. So what do you think he was expecting out of you?
Yeah, I think he totally thought he was just going to own me and prove that he was this smart, intellectual, philosophical guy. Because throughout the conversation, whenever I would respond to his point, which is what he was asking me to do, he would get even more hostile. And then he'd go on his phone and Google search and try to come up with something to say back. So yeah, tactics wise, it was really interesting because he seemed not to want for me to answer the question that he asked me.
There's a bit of a reminder there, I think, for all of us, because every one of us would get in this conversation, especially on the college campus, especially somewhere like the Ohio State, where it's challenging at times. A lot of people do not seem very open-minded. It can be easy to kind of fall into what he was trying to do, as you said, just own you and just win the debate. But what good does it do if we win a debate and we don't win the person, right? We know that's not very helpful. And that's why I think what you did in this conversation with the second clip we'll get into is super important. But here, I think, Esther, again, I would love your thoughts on this too, but it seems to be the biggest point here is he is just drawing this line between humanity, two classes. You have humans who are persons, humans who aren't people. A radical idea called personhood theory that's not new, but a very dangerous idea.
Yeah, so he has these categories in his mind that he's assuming that there's, as long as you're born, you matter, and then we can deal with, okay, you're alive. But if you're not, then you're not alive, why should I care? And I think it's very interesting, kind of what you were talking about before with the burden of proof. This is a very extreme position. It's been held by people like Peter Singer, who's a known eugenist. It's a very extreme position, but he doesn't feel the need to define or defend what he is saying. He's very concerned with what Grace has to say. And I find this a lot on college campuses. People make very extreme claims and expect you to provide all the answers when they need to be held accountable for their views just as much as we do.
That's so well said. And think about it, just we get that it's radical because we every day our conversations are about human equality, so we get this. But the theory, for just a summary, is the idea that to be a person, you must be human plus something, right? So human, in this point, we'll get into the next clip what he thinks you need to have to be a person, but being human is not enough. You need to be human plus something. So that's radical to us sounding, but it's really obviously radical when you look backwards at this throughout time. No one looks at the Nazis who said you have to be human plus Aryan to be a person, and the Jewish people, Jewish humans, you're not a person. Right, we look at that as disgusting, radical injustice. Or in America, chattel slavery, looking at a black man saying, sorry, you have to be human plus white skin to be a person, you don't make the cut. We clearly see that as radical. Why is it so hard, though, to look at today and see that this is not radical, this is radical too?
What I've seen is something, it's something that we're living and breathing. We don't like to think that we are just as guilty of these past views. It's just kind of repackaged and put these nice bows that, like, oh no, this is just, we're being very smart and intellectual and nuanced. We're not thinking through the consequences of what we're believing because we're so entrenched in it.
Yeah, and that was very much indicative of the conversation. He acted like I was the one who wasn't living in reality. And when I brought up what we're exactly talking about, that this is a position that eugenicists hold and we can look back on history and condemn this worldview, he got so upset, and that's ultimately when the conversation ended. He was acting like I was the radical and I was the one not living in reality.
Just press pause there and like step outside of yourself for a moment. So we have two people talking about this. One saying all humans are people. Your differences maybe matter in certain ways, but not fundamentally to your very value. And he's saying, no, some humans don't make the cut. Which of these views is radical? It boggles my mind, right? That we can actually, as a society, look at these two people, and many people in America would say, no, he's the rational one and Grace is the crazy one. That's just, I think, shocking. And I think back to what you were saying, Esther, it's this, like, we're living, breathing the worldview prejudices around us. We pick up this idea that you have to be born to be a person and just assume, oh, that sounds right. In the same way you might have, if you lived under chattel slavery, you might have just picked up the prejudice that people with black skin aren't people, and you just don't examine your worldview.
Yeah, and you don't have people really directly confronting it. And those who are considered are sidelined because we have every advantage. We born people in the situation, we're the strong in this scenario. We're the ones who have everything to benefit and nothing to lose. And so it doesn't, for us being right or wrong, that's it. It's hard to understand the consequences of this idea. This is why we use AVP on campuses to show the reality. It's like, These are human beings and they are valuable. Look at what we're doing. We like to look at women that they are the primary victims of abortion or they need abortion when we are overlooking the true victims of it because we are so blinded. We're not the ones who have something to lose in this debate.
That's true. Yeah. And just for anyone listening, I'm sure it's clear from the context, but AVP's abortion victim photos, which we do use on all of our outreaches. And this young man was presumably looking at a photo near you, Grace, when this happened, right?
Yep. And he just couldn't see why I cared. He said, "Why do you care whether or not they're human beings?" And I was like, "That's the crux of the issue. That's what we have to ask to find out if abortion is okay or not." And he just couldn't understand that.
So I think we should go on to now what his benchmark then is for personhood. You have to be human plus what? I think he'll fill in those blanks for us if we continue the conversation.
I would not consider them to be a life.
They're growing and developing and they have a heartbeat though, so how could that not be living?
Why is that what defines life?
What do you think defines life?
I would say at the bare minimum, capacity to exist on your own without having to depend on the resources of another person.
Newborns depend on resources from other people, though. They're not inside of a mother, but they're almost fully dependent on someone taking care of them.
Yes, but they have still been born.
You keep just saying they've been born. What makes like a 9-inch journey down the birth canal? Why is that what gives someone value?
Okay, again, maybe just a summary, Grace.
Yeah, so he was saying that to be considered a life, you have to be not dependent on the resources of others, and you have to be born.
Okay, so what struck me with this comment is that you're not asking if they're valuable, what constitutes as a valuable person that's deserving of rights. You're asking what is a life. Because most people on college campuses or even that you talk to in general will say, yeah, they're alive, but they're not like a person like you or me. And he's defining even a life as this, he's making a value claim to constitute something that's alive. Mm. He's combining the two in this weird way that's affecting his whole worldview, which I found interesting because normally we distinguish between what we can observe and then moral claims that we can draw from that observation. Science is something that we use to observe the world around us, the natural world, right? And so when we are saying that the preborn child is alive, we're making an observation that they're growing, they have their own unique DNA, they're developing, they have human parents, they're separate, they're alive. Then we go into the moral claim from that if they're a living human being, they should be considered valuable. That's more of a moral claim. And that gets into the whole ethics of the situation, but there's a distinction between the observation that science brings us and then the moral claim. And he's kind of combining, he's overlooking the observation standpoint. He doesn't even care about that point.
I think that's a really good point. And I think that, you know, to illustrate what you're saying, Esther, like, for example, if you were to ask, what is this podcast? From a scientific standpoint, you give a great definition of what this podcast is. Does this podcast have value? Is a totally separate question. And scientific research cannot tell us the value of something. It can tell us something is, not whether it matters. And so he has kind of jumped the gun, as you say. We would say, first, what is the preborn embryo? Is this a human or not? And then does this human have equal value to us? Two questions. There are two categories, as you say. People often mix these categories, and he, I think, is just kind of leapfrogging over, and that's why he's so confused that Grace would define life as merely the biological meaning, because he just isn't very interested in that question, right? He's just kind of jumping over that, but you can't get to that question without knowing what the thing we're dealing with is. And I think this is a lack of systematic thinking. We have to know, what is the thing, the embryo, what is she, then does she matter? He, as you said, is kind of just jumping on to the next question.
Well, and then it was so interesting because he wasn't even making a distinction between non-human life and human life. Like, I had to clarify, like, look at this blade of grass. This isn't a human being. It's alive. It's growing, but it's not human. And he couldn't even see that. And so I had to bring up, like, even our law distinguishes between different life forms. Our law protects human beings and gives human beings certain rights. And he couldn't even make that distinction. He was just only thinking about value.
Yeah, I think so. This is like I know we have limited time in this, but it seems like people are just lumping all life in the same category, right? I think that they are just treating all living beings as the same kind of thing. And then you have this lump category of living things. And then of those living things, some of them are persons. Ours is different. We say you have various kinds of living things. And some of those, like humans, by definition, all of them are persons already.
Yeah. And so getting back to this idea of personhood theory, right? This distinguishing between there are some people that some human beings that are valuable, some that aren't. But another extension of this is that there are some non-humans that are persons. And so you get into this idea that of what person leads us to is this idea of functionalism. Basically that our value is determined by our certain set of functions. And these can vary. Some people will say like I talked to a high school student a few weeks ago talking about their ability to contribute to society and things like that. These are ideas of functionalism. And this guy too has this idea of, well, you have to be able to function independent of everyone else. That is his marker. That's his idea of this is, you have to be maybe not even human, but you have to have this, you have to be independent of everyone else in order to be a valuable life.
Yeah, that's well said. And I think if you, again, just rephrase the basic core worldview here we're talking about, it's pretty intuitive to us, which is better. So one worldview, humans are valuable because of who they are. The other worldview, functionalism, you just said, Esther, people are valuable based on what they can or cannot do. I think we all get it. That is wrong, right? To say that your values and what you can or cannot do is just patently, obviously dangerous. I mean, once we say that's IQ or it's skin color or it's all these various capacities, characteristics about us, we destroy human equality because we don't all have the same IQ, various skin color. We have various shades of color. Even if we might be all considered in this room white or any other ethnicity, does not matter. We still have various shades of skin color. That is irrelevant. So functionalism is inherently dangerous. The better worldview is that by saying that all humans by definition matter.
Well, and it was so interesting to me because the arbitrary characteristic that he was picking was just being born, being on this side of the womb. When I think when we look at like embryology and fetal development, a baby who has just been born is not very much more developed than a viable baby inside the womb. But to him, that doesn't matter. It's not what they can do. It's just they just have to be born.
Choice for Two has this great video. It's very funny. It's satirical. But this she is this really short video talking about there's this magical birth canal that like these six and these what is it 6 or 9 inches
nine
that
inch
like not
make
a person mm-hmm. person magic she's like
thank
don't,
you magical
we,
birth
we,
canal
yeah we don't know what happens in between, but I think it's fairies. And it's this idea of like this is something that changes when really nothing really that dramatic changes. Their location changes, like just like stepping outside, but they're just as dependent on their parents. They're dependent on everyone around them to survive. Right, just like that preborn child is a few minutes before. There is nothing that really magically changes. And I think you did a great job in both clips. We heard that you're like, this doesn't change anything, right? This doesn't magically make you a person, doesn't magically make this a life. This journey doesn't change you.
Yeah, when I was listening to Grace, I almost heard in the back of my mind Princess Bride going off in my head when you say, you keep saying they're born. And I was thinking, like, you keep saying that word, don't think it means what you think it means, from Inigo Montoya, right? But so you did say, like, you were clarifying from you're telling me the truth. They are not born. I get it. We all agree, right? But then why does that matter? He doesn't define that. And we have just a little bit of time left in this, but Grace, he did refer to dependency. The baby depends on the mother for survival, but we know that's one of four differences between preborn humans and born humans. So maybe just as a summary, as we close, could you clarify for those listening who maybe aren't familiar with this, what are the four differences between preborn humans and born humans, and then we can illustrate how those differences don't justify stripping the younger ones of their personhood.
Yeah, so for those of you listening right now at home, there's a really helpful acronym called SLED, and this is a really easy way for you guys to remember the four main differences between born humans and preborn human beings. So S stands for size, L stands for level of development, E stands for environment, and D stands for degree of dependence. And these are all definitely differences. We would all agree that it's just that pro-choice people are saying that these are differences that make preborn babies less valuable.
Exactly. So size, I mean, you know, you line our staff up and we're all not very tall maybe, but I'm definitely not one of the taller ones on our staff. And so I'm no less of a person than Silas. He's taller than me for sure, right? In level development, we have differing level degrees in here of how many college degrees, right? So we have different levels of development. Doesn't change our personhood. Environment, I don't know. I grew up in Indiana. It didn't make me less of a person. And dependency, I mean, we all depend on someone or something. Even this guy, right? You were saying even he depended on someone. He didn't get his own food. He depends on others for resources. These things describe us. They don't define our value.
Yeah, and I brought up to him with environment. I was like, if I took you to outer space and didn't give you oxygen and said, well, you can't survive in this environment, so you are clearly not a person, that would be ridiculous. And he was like, that's not the same thing.
And Esther's dependent on her phone that just tumbled down. Have you heard that audio clip?
Sorry, guys.
No, but that's a really good point. Yeah, if you took him out there, he needs someone, right? We all need someone or something. these differences do not justify stripping anyone of their personhood.
Exactly. I love bringing these up on outreach because these are things that we all differ on to varying degrees. SLED is a great acronym to use in this because it's this sliding scale of value, because all of these, we have each of these in different degrees. Mm-hmm. I love bringing up just kind of also the secondary tactic that I love putting with this is trot out the toddler. If you have a 2-year-old, they're less developed, they're smaller, they're more dependent, they usually live in a different place. That doesn't make them any different, any less valuable. And we're attributing these same differences to the preborn children and saying that because of those same reasons, they're not a person. And that's the danger of this idea of personhood theory, is that once we start making exceptions for certain people that they're not human, we easily start sliding and applying these same categories to other people.
That's exactly right. And we all have in our lives babies that matter to us, right? Whether it be a child, niece, nephew, friend's child, we all know babies. And where are they? They're not here in the GoPro closet with us, right? Difference of environment. They're a lot smaller than us, a lot less developed than us. They're a lot more dependent on their parents than we are. And this is a good thing when you're a baby. You should be more dependent, smaller, so on and so forth. Are they less of a person? We would all say no. Peter Singer, as you referenced earlier, Esther, he might say yes, right?
I was reading him and he said that if you have a fire and you have a 3-year-old and a dog, the dog's more of a person than your 3-year-old. So you should save the dog and not the 3-year-old.
Disgusting.
So toss that out, though.
The dog has more categories of a person at that level than that 3-year-old at their stage of development.
Well, if you have that, you should put in the show notes where you can read that, because I haven't read that. But that is a great illustration to toss out there when you're talking to someone, because people still have moral intuitions they can't get rid of. When they hear this illustration of, what do I say, the dog or the 3-year-old, or three-month or 3-year-old?
I think it was a 3-year-old.
Anyhow, save the child or the dog. Most of us would probably want to say the child, because we still perceive morals as God put them on our hearts. So that's a great illustration to use. So look for the show notes for that. But I think this is a powerful conversation to summarize these key points of personhood theories, of very dangerous, radical ideas we have demonstrated. And I think there's hopefully many of you listeners, I'm afraid, you have interacted with. If not, you will interact with it, right? We all must be ready to demonstrate the dangers of that worldview compared with the better worldview, ours, in which all humans matter by definition, because we're all created equal. And so that's what we hope that you will keep having conversations on. That's the whole point of this podcast. If you want us to unpack more about personhood theory or any other part of SLED, let us know what to focus on in future episodes. But until then, please also just comment on the show. We'd love to hear from you, whether it be a direct message on Instagram, which I don't know if Lexi will get that, or Esther. Someone will read it. I promise you, someone will read it and respond to it, right?
Claire should get it.
Okay, Claire will get it. Someone will respond, and we'd love to read it too. But also, leave us a review. We want to know what you think about this. And if it's my big question for you is this helpful to you as you're having conversations, thinking through your pro-life ethic? So find us on social media. We're at Debrief With Us on Instagram, or just go to createdequal.org. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you again next week. We are Created Equal, and this has been The Debrief.